It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Friday. Fun. Looking forward to the weekend. Yeah, but we got 3 hours of radio on the way, setting up what is going to be a good sports weekend, setting up what is a weekend that starts tonight in the world of sports over at the MUA. Wheeler Ramirez will check in the 4 o'clock hour. Aces are playing. They've got 2 games this weekend, trying to right the ship. I feel like I've said that every weekend, and they haven't righted the ship, so we'll get into a deeper examination of what's going on with your Las Vegas Aces in the 4 o'clock hour. Today was a big day. You know, the next 4 days are actually kind of big because we're going to feel like these things are real. Monday, it'll feel more real when we're out there covering the groundbreaking for the A's stadium. Doesn't mean it's guaranteed, and John Fisher is a quirky guy, the owner of the A's, but that'll at least be a good sign that they're moving in the right direction, shovels into dirt. Now, today I thought was big because, not that the fight's not going to happen, but confirmation on top of confirmation on top of confirmation that Canelo and Crawford is going to happen here. We knew that. It is going to happen at Allegiant, so we'll give you some of the press conference in less than 5 minutes. Chris is helping us out down here at TI. Back in the Finley Toyota Studios. It's Griffin. What's going on, Griffin?
What's going on, Steve? How is it down there at our favorite place on Fridays?
It's beautiful. I have very low standards. I love this place, but as long as I got AC, I got free parking. I love that on the Strip. I got free parking. Where else was it the other night? I got free parking. I was thrilled because I thought I was going to get dinged for 20 up the road. But always free parking, no questions. And 55-plus TVs here at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar for the baseball going on tonight. Yeah, that's the schedule. And WNBA as well. We're going to talk to Chuck Esposito a little later, the bookmaker here at TI with STN. I'm expecting news, I think, unless I was roped in by an also typical Mike Greenberg, strong tease this morning on GetUp, said that it was very likely that Kevin Durant is getting traded today. Now, is it going to come down today? Because it seems like the clock is ticking and they want to get this done before the NBA draft, which is next week. We do have the finals, Game 7 on Sunday. Durant, it appears, has done what most organizations can't stand, especially when you have a player. He's kind of pigeonholed the Suns in not being super enthusiastic to go anywhere else but the Rockets, the Heat, and the Spurs. Shams from ESPN summed it up as kind of a game of chicken. There are other clubs that would like Kevin Durant, like the Minnesota Timberwolves. But they also want him to be enthusiastic about going there. So the Suns are in a very difficult position. Or is it not that difficult? You know what? Portland seemed like it was pigeonholed with Damian Lillard. And Miami was taking advantage of that by not offering a very competitive deal to the Blazers. And then Bucks stepped up, offered a better deal. And the Blazers were like, sorry, we don't owe you a landing spot if we're going to get a crap return. So maybe that happens here, but we'll see what happens throughout this show. And we'll see if KD is on the move. Obviously, where he goes starts to control some of the landscape, the ebb and the flow of what's going to happen with other free agents, with the draft, with other trades. And I paused there for a second because I was thinking to myself, okay, Eastern Conference, Western Conference. So he's in for 2 Western Conference teams, the Spurs and the Rockets, and then the Heat, and that would be a big move for the Heat for a lot of reasons to get Kevin Durant, but also in a Eastern Conference that could be wide open next week or next year. I say that, and the Pacers might be the champ, although I don't think a lot of people will consider the Pacers the favorite next year. Even if they do, they did come out of the East and they win the title. So A lot to be determined here, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, but Kevin Durant probably on the move sometime very, very soon. So I told you, Canelo and Crawford is happening here. It's a mega fight. They're going to do it at Allegiant Stadium. So they're going to try to draw, you know, 50 to 65,000. We're going to give you the ticket prices later on. It's pretty interesting, their approach on this one. You know, I completely forgot, Griffin, about the other big question, because we've gotten so little information from the promoters, kind of led by Turki Alashik, Saudi Arabian, and Dana White. Dana White spoke briefly on Jim Rome. I don't even know if Rome asked about or was in tune with the rumor from De La Hoya. Remember Oscar De La Hoya? Was it last week that De La Hoya was kind of chuckling? He's like, it's going to be an afternoon fight in Vegas. How ridiculous is this? They want to get out of the way so that Dana can, you know, watch his Riyadh card. What is it? Not Riyadh. Was it the UFC 3 Noche or something?
Noche in San Antonio.
There it is, yeah, in San Antonio. So this press conference was a very weird setup. It was in Saudi Arabia. I'm just going to say I don't know how I would do it, a press conference like this, because basically you've got a billionaire running the press conference and everyone has to kind of like bow and kiss his ass in Turki Alashik. He is the one putting up the money, but it's not really a real press conference because it seemed like everyone was afraid to ask any questions beyond like, hey, congrats. You know, thanks for putting on the fight. You're doing a great job for boxing. This is where you're going to hear the question. He was asked, hey, De La Hoya said this is an afternoon fight. He answered, and I was like, okay, I think it is an afternoon fight. See what you hear.
We saw Oscar De La Hoya trying to say that the fight was going to take place maybe in the daytime.
Yeah, this is what I want from you, to say his name. I decided with Dana White to have a breakfast in MGM at 10 a.m., inshallah. Then we will go to the arena to have the fights quick. And after that, we will go dinner to Carpon, and in the night, we will watch Conjuring, because it will launch in September. Oscar De La Hoya wastes my time with this question. Of course, this is in the beak. This is the boxing, the sport number one in the world. This is Canelo and Crawford.
Okay, Griffin, when's the fight? Afternoon?
I thought he was saying evening. I wasn't really sure what time he was confirming there.
I watched it, and I was like, wait, I think he just confirmed it was in the afternoon. The answer is long. You want to play it again and see, maybe this was sarcasm, like Saudi Arabian sarcasm?
Yeah, this is what I want from you, to say his name. I decided with Dana White to have a breakfast in MGM at 10 a.m., inshallah. Then we will go to the arena to have the fights quick. And after that, we will go dinner to Carpon, and in the night, we will watch Conjuring, because it will launch in September. Oscar De La Hoya wastes my time with this question. Of course, this is in the beak. This is the boxing, the sport number one in the world. This is Canelo and Crawford.
Okay, he said, of course, it's in the big. And then the guy laughed.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was sarcasm? So it is at night?
He just laid out his and Dana's day plans for that.
But I think it was sarcasm. But the way he said it, I was watching. I'm like, okay, they're getting breakfast, and then they'll go watch the fights. He did say the fights will be quick. So maybe that was the sarcasm. And then he said, of course, the fight is big. So, and that was pulled directly. There was no glitch. There wasn't of course, it's at night. So I think I missed something in translation. Chris Mannix, who's covered boxing for a long time, said Canelo Crawford will take place. This is what Mannix, this is how he read it. Will take place in the evening. Says Oscar De La Hoya, who suggested the fight would be in the afternoon, quote, is wasting my time. Okay, I didn't get that completely, but Chris is probably smarter than I am. Or maybe has talked to Turki Alashik and knows that he's got like a little bit of a sarcastic streak.
I mean, if he's going to be up there on the stage using sarcasm against what Golden Boy was saying, I think it'd maybe be safe to say it's probably not going to be the time that De La Hoya is putting out there.
Okay. But you understand the way I set it up, it's a billionaire sheikh in Saudi Arabia, so no one was going to. I was like, please just ask a follow-up. Like, can you please confirm that the fight is at night? So I assume it's at night. Information's been very difficult to get on this one. That was the first press conference of three. I thought this response was interesting. Turki Al-Sheikh about 10 days ago said he doesn't want to see any more Tom and Jerry fights. If he's putting his money into fights, he wants fights to be action fights. So you're going to hear the question here. Bud Crawford's going to answer about, hey, this better be an action fight.
You heard His Excellency saying no more Tom and Jerry, no more running, but you're moving up two weight classes. It's not going to be smart for you to stand there and hammer it out with this guy. So how do you kind of balance that, not running, but being elusive in fighting Canelo?
However I got to fight, I'm going to win. Simple as that. I'm not going to let somebody else force me or tell me how to fight when I've been fighting my whole life. You know, I won't be running. You know, I could tell you that. But I will be, you know, doing a lot of touching.
There you go. Bud Crawford saying, you know, no one's going to tell me how to run the fight, dictate the fight, but he's not going to be running. On the way back, let's actually, we'll get into the Dodgers and Padres, which actually kind of was a Tom and Jerry brawl. They really didn't get into it, except for Dave Roberts, who bought someone else, and the other guy just backed down.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Just rolling out here on this Friday, Cofield and Company. Let's bring in Matt Neverett, who is on the road. Matt, of course, the voice of baseball in Las Vegas, the voice of the Rebels as well. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's happening? I'm alive, I'm awake, and the Aviators are first half champions, so that's really all that matters.
There you go. I want to get to the Aviators in just a couple minutes. First of all, tell us where you are and what it's like.
Hanging out right now in Sugar Land, Texas, about a half an hour southwest of Houston. It's humid, it's muggy, but the Aviators are rolling, winners of 11 straight, and they clinched the first half championship in the PCL with a doubleheader sweep yesterday. So all is well in Sugar Land for sure.
Nice. Let's talk about the Dodgers and Padres the last couple of days. Give me your read on, I don't know if there's a right or a wrong, and kind of the way the Padres are handling it. What do you think? What'd you say?
I mean, it was interesting, you know, obviously tit for tat. Tatis gets hit, and then Ohtani gets hit. And I just actually talked to my dad, who calls the games, Tim Neverett, about 10 minutes ago about it, actually, just by coincidence. And Ohtani, kind of the voice of reason, calming the Padres dugout down. And even my dad, who's been around baseball forever and ever, said, I've never seen that. And if it were anybody else on the roster, that likely wouldn't have happened. If that's Miguel Rojas going over to the Padres dugout like that, there would have been some issues. But it's Shohei Ohtani, and I think that the reaction from the San Diego dugout kind of shows the reverence that the entire baseball world has for Shohei. Even though it's, you know, the bitterest of rivals in a heated contest, they really, you know, respect what he has to say. And, you know, he's one of those guys that always plays the game the right way. And I'll be interested to see what happens when these two teams meet in August. It's going to be quite a while before they face off again. But I want to see, like, a MMA battle between Mike Schilt and Dave Roberts. They looked ready to throw hands last night.
Did they look ready to throw hands, or just Dave Roberts?
I think a little bit of both. And obviously, tensions flaring, emotions really, really running high in that series, especially with the Dodgers, not in a downturn, but not playing up to their own standards here as of late. So I think that definitely, that frustration has something to do with it. And yeah, I will say, you know, I am a Dodger defender, but the timing of the substitutions, taking out Betts, Smith, and Freeman just down by five, kind of in the middle to late stages of the game, did seem a little suspect and kind of out of character for the way that Roberts typically manages games. But, you know, who knows what's actually going on behind the scenes. And I think if it were up to Manny Machado, they would have thrown hands for sure, because he's all over it.
I don't know, Matt. I think Matt Neverett's with us, voice of baseball here in Vegas. He's on the road with the Aviators, massive Major League Baseball follower, a longtime fan like myself. I feel like from the Padres side, first of all, Dave Roberts went up and bumped Schilt, and Schilt did nothing. Like, dude, it's go time. Schilt is barely older than me. Like, come on. Secondly, I see Manny Machado talk real tough. Where is he in the middle of the scrum? Right? And by the way, I thought it was really interesting early, because Schilt's the one who was talking real tough a couple days ago, because I think it was Andy Páez, however you say his name, right? He got hit, and then Schilt's like, who the hell does he think he is? Like, yeah, you hit him. By the way, he also, like, ripped the hell out of the Padres at times in the series. You called him out and basically said he's nobody, that we would go after, you know, bigger guys on the team, and then we come full circle, and then you don't go after anyone, Schilt, when Dave Roberts comes out and basically, let's go. Let's drop the gloves, They don't have gloves. Let's fight. So I don't know. The Padres to me are like fake tough guys.
I kind of agree. And, you know, Shildt notwithstanding, I think Manny Machado is a fake tough guy. Not that he's not tough, but he's got a history of these vocal barbs. And his quote today about Fernando Tatis, he said, the Dodgers better pray that his x-ray comes back negative. What is he going to do?
What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? Are you insinuating you're going to fight them? Are you insinuating a crime is going to be committed? Like, I just don't know what he expects the reaction to that to be. There's really only one way to react to that, and that's, you know, how you would react to a threat in that kind of a situation.
I mean, as you said, they showed reverence towards Ohtani as he was like, let's all calm down, and pointed to the Dodger dugout and was like, don't come out here. You have the best player in the history of baseball, the best player in baseball, Manny. Go get him. I don't know. I just think there's a lot of bravado sometimes, and the guys who actually have the chance to show bravado a lot of times are the pitchers, but in this case, the hitters had a chance to do it, and the Padres did nothing. I think the Dodgers are kind of bullying the Padres, because I will side with the Padres. Like, how many freaking times are you going to hit Tatis? Like, they're basically testing him. Like, we're gonna go after one of your best players and just keep hitting him.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. It is almost like a little brother complex right now between the Dodgers and the Padres. And, you know, it'll all shake out at the end of the regular season, and then a likely matchup in the playoffs. I'm going to guess that we see a division series showdown between either the Dodgers and the Padres or the Dodgers and the Giants. That NL West is really getting chippy. And I think in my mind, too, taking over as the division with the most bad blood, you know, forever and ever, it was the American League East with the Red Sox and the Yankees and some of the other teams getting involved in some brouhahas. And then as a Pirates guy, there was all those fights in the NL Central for a long time. I think the NL West right now is the most contentious division on the field in baseball.
Well, a big part of that happening, right, Matt, is that all the organizations except the pathetic Rockies are choosing to compete. Even the, you know, the Diamondbacks try to get better every year, and the AL East used to have all these great rivalries up and down the, you know, the 95 corridor, but the Orioles are down, and I don't know what the Red Sox are doing right now. I wanted you to comment on that deal, too. I mean, Rafael Devers, according to the Red Sox, not holding up, you know, his end of the deal, not doing his job. So you trade him, but the problem was the package they got back and the timing of it was really weird. If you're going to trade a superstar, get a real haul back.
Yeah, and allegedly the conversation went that Craig Breslow asked about top prospect Hunter Bishop in the Giants system, and they just said nope, and they said, all right, we'll move on and, you know, take some other bodies. I do like the lefty Kyle Harrison they got and then immediately optioned down to Worcester, and he's there because, and they've come out and said this, that if he's there through July 4th with the way that the contracts are set up, they get an extra year of team control, so that move makes sense. And I think it's just a festering, lingering issue between Devers and the Red Sox management. I think it was really telling to hear David Ortiz kind of mention that he, you know, tried to take him under his wing and show him what it was like to be a face of a franchise, especially that franchise. And he really didn't get a lot of reciprocation from Devers and his camp. So I think that was very telling to me. And I think it's a great setup for Rafi in San Francisco right now. I mean, he's going to hit a bunch of balls into the Covey Cove in the right field corner. That right center field triple valley is going to be big time for him. I think it's going to work out well for him, but you know, it was a matter of they said, okay, you're going to DH. He said, great. And then they said, hey, maybe we want you to play some third because of an injury. And he said, wait, I can't put the glove back on. He just had me take it off. And it's, I can kind of see both sides. A, from the player's side, you're getting all this money. You think you got a little bit of control and you can say, hey, I want A, B, and C to happen. But also from the team's perspective, hey, we are paying you this much money. You really need to listen to what we are asking you to do, especially for a team that's been beleaguered by injuries. You got to do what you got to do in a situation like that, right?
Madden Everett's with us. Again, I side with the player here. I think the Red Sox are not real good with their players. This is a different management team than it's been. And listen, the fans shouldn't be freaking like doxing Craig Breslow. That gets a little crazy. Yeah. But I think there's a certain amount of respect you can show to the head of the franchise on the field, who you gave, you know, what, $31 million on average, to at least talk to him about the fact that you may move him off his position. The great thing is we're already getting feedback, and it's not from Giants management. We're already getting feedback, Matt, that Rafael Devers is like, third, first, yeah, let's go, I'll do it.
Which, how funny is that?
It's hilarious.
A change of mentality, and I do agree with you on the front that the Red Sox management not handling this whole situation and really the last couple of years very well. So, you know, maybe it's just an example of, hey, some mutual respect goes a long way, especially in the world of baseball.
I wanted to go a little hardcore, and I always ask you, have you seen players play in the minors? Maybe you have. This guy's not at AAA yet, but the player you mentioned, their elite prospect was who, Bishop, you said?
Yeah, Hunter Bishop.
So they got James Tibbs back in the deal, which I find interesting because he's a 2024 draft pick. He is a hitter, and we've already seen that some of the guys come up from that draft. What do you know about Tibbs? His average isn't great. He's ripping it up pretty decently at Double A. He's a Florida State guy. He was the 13th pick in the draft. He's got 12 homers and 34 ribs.
Yeah, I mean, you always got to take into consideration the minor league power numbers. You know, 12 home runs, I've heard it said, you know, for this example, 12 home runs project something closer to like 20 in the majors because you've got guys consistently throwing harder, consistently throwing more strikes, and you're going to get more at-bats just by virtue of there being more games. So you always got to extrapolate that out a little bit. He's a big-time power threat, and he also speaks to, you know, this trend of guys coming up and making an impact on the major league roster very shortly after getting drafted. We've seen it with Paul Skeens. We've seen it with Nick Kurtz, who hit another walk-off home run last night. These guys are more ready to go, especially these advanced college bats like Tibbs and like Kurtz and like some other guys that are flying through some of these systems. I'm thinking like a Dylan Cruz as well, even though his rise wasn't as fast. We're seeing the gap between college and Major League Baseball definitely getting smaller. The pitching is better than it's ever been at that level, and the hitters have more to work with in terms of the technology, in terms of the analytics, and in terms of all the metrics. I think that gap is kind of closing. Still worlds different, but we're seeing more and more guys coming through the systems a lot faster. I think Tibbs, because of the trade that he was involved in, is going to be pushed maybe a little quicker than he should, but if the power numbers hold up like they're projected to, I think he's going to be just fine, especially at Fenway Park.
You mentioned Kurtz with another walk-off. Listen, he's got it, right? I mean, he does. And, you know, eventually when he cuts down on the strikeouts, he's a 35 to 40 homer guy, and he's got flair. Last night, I thought the homer and then the bat whip, again, yeah, to go back to our conversation about 5 minutes ago, that's the kind of thing I think in the majors. At some point, the opposition may not tell Nick Kurtz, cut it out verbally, but something might happen.
Hey, I mean, if you're a left-handed hitter hitting a walk-off home run to dead central off of Josh Hader, of all people, I think you could throw the bat into the stratosphere for all that I care. And, you know, is it a personal note? How about this one, Cofield? You'll never guess who I was standing next to at a bar watching that home run. Mark McGwire.
What?
He is in town. He's a roving consultant for the Athletics, and they had him in town when the Aviators, excuse me, clinched the first half championship last night. I was down in the clubhouse for the champagne celebration. Kind of bumped into an older but bigger looking guy, and I didn't recognize him. I did a quadruple take. Yeah, and it was Big Mac hanging out. Sharing a beer, sharing some champagne. He was my number one favorite player as a kid, bar none. So I was so excited to get to meet him and get to talk to him. I had a chance to interview him actually today for my pregame show on the broadcast. So this is a very, very cool week in a lot of regards for me personally.
When you said bigger, did you mean bigger than you or bigger than he used to be?
Well, bigger than me is not saying much. No, but he is. He looks like he could still go out there and sock 30 or 40 home runs at a major league level. He's got a power lifter for a father. His brother was a competitive weightlifter as well, and you know he's always been a big guy, and he hasn't lost a lot of that. I mean, he is a massive human being. I would not want to see him step into the box if I'm on the hill.
Matt Everett, Voice of Baseball in Las Vegas. Let's close on this, and you know you mentioned the Aviators a couple times there. Let's not bury the lead. The first half championship, and that is with many players going up to the majors and helping out the A's. How have they done this?
Well, I mean, it was interesting coming into the year. We knew that they were going to be a really solid roster on paper, maybe the best since the 2019 changeover to the Athletics affiliation. The season started with 10 of the top 30 prospects in the A's system. So on paper, we knew it was going to be a really good team. But the consistency and the resilience of this team has been really, really fun to watch. You mentioned some of those guys going up like Kurtz and Denzel Clark, among others. But as far as the rest of the bodies that have been here, especially the position players, it's been a really consistent group. Logan Davidson, Darryl Hernaez, number three overall prospect Colby Thomas. You got Brett Harris as well, all providing great value at the top of the lineup. Alejo Lopez and Carlos Cortez, who the year playing sparingly, now playing just about every day and both hitting in the low 300s. I mean, for Lopez specifically, he was hitting 190 at the end of April. And looking into today, he's up in the low 300s in the top 10 in the league in batting average. So go figure, more at-bats and consistent playing time has led to more success. And they've also done it with the arms. They have the best batting average in minor league baseball, but they also have a team ERA that's the best in the PCL, a 4.25 earned run average in the Pacific Coast League. You basically got to subtract a full point if you're playing in any other league. You play in some of these IL environments like Indianapolis or Erie or, you know, some of these places in the Northeast, that ERA would be way lower as well. So a 4.25 in the PCL is really something to behold. And, you know, this team's going to host the PCL Championship Series with the right to potentially play in the AAA Championship game. All that in Las Vegas ballpark at the end of September. So it's been a fun year so far, and it's likely to be a fun September as well.
Matt, tell people where they can hear the game tonight.
It's Raider Nation Radio, AM 920. You can also watch the Sugarland broadcast if you want. Garrett Green and Gerald Sanchez on the call, the Bally Sports Live app. But, yeah, come listen to my interview with Mark McGuire and stay for the game. That's Raider Nation Radio, AM 920.
See you, Matt. We appreciate it. Have fun.
Anytime, Cofield. Appreciate you.
There he is, voice of baseball in Las Vegas, voice of the Rebels, Matt Never. Coming up in less than 10, we'll really get into the Canelo and Crawford fight. Yeah, it looks like it's an evening fight at Allegiant, but there were some other things that were said in that press conference in Saudi Arabia. Really interesting.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Yeah, lots of baseball going down here in just a little bit at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. On the TVs, they're not going to play a game in the Sportsbook or the Bar. One note, not really an injury note, but the Angels game, no Ron Washington, the manager, unlisted health issues, so he will not manage tonight. The Astros are in L.A. Kikuchi's on the mound. We were talking about San Diego and the Dodgers. Now they are split, so they don't have to be beanballing each other and fighting. Both are now at home. Kansas City's in town. That's a good series against those. Lorenzen will go against Pavetta. And then the Dodgers will have Kershaw on the mound. He's been pretty effective in his start so far. We'll see if he can give him five innings just about every time out. I was going to say the rest of the way, but that may be asking a little too much with Kershaw. Generally not that durable at this age. But Mackenzie Gore has been one of the strikeout leaders in the major league. So good pitching matchup. I don't know if it's a good game. It's a minus 196 number as the Dodgers are favored in that one. We're going to get to Canelo and Crawford here in just a couple minutes. Also, some wrestling notes. A legend is back. So Ryan McKinnell is the legend, but also a wrestling legend is back. He's going to check in here in less than five. But let's do a giveaway. Steel Panther. Metal band and kind of comedy band in town in August. Two dates at the House of Blues. You can get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com. They're funny. Community Property, Fat Girl, Weenie Ride. They really are good. They're funny. 364-1100, 364-1100. Caller number 7 for Steel Panther tickets. And coming up, the Big Mac Attack, as we'll also get into one of the scariest movies of all time in terms of being jarring. Maybe it's the scariest movie of all time.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
All right, let's bring in Big Mac, Ryan McKinnell, Fight Insider, as we got some big fight news over the last couple of days. And we figured there had to be a deadline on Allegiant or T-Mobile for Canelo and Crawford because the first press conference was going down today in Saudi Arabia. We'll get to that part of it in a couple minutes. Big Mac, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. It's nice that deadlines still exist in the fight game, right? Like, I mean, Tom Aspinall, John Jones, we can drag that on for a year and a half. You're right. At least we got some finality on this Crawford and Canelo fight. I mean, listen, Steven, you know this. I mean, I'm glad, number one, that it's Allegiant. We talked a little bit about it last week. I didn't necessarily think that was going to happen. I'm glad it's happening, and I'm glad it's on Netflix, right? This is all kind of a perfect storm. If they do it right, to really pump up boxing and give fans, hardcores and casuals and everybody in between, something they've wanted for quite some time.
Interesting press conference today run by basically Turki Alaşik, which had a very different feel than I think what we're going to see in New York on the next stop of the tour in Vegas next Friday. So, yes, it's going to be at Allegiant. So the effort is to get 65,000 in. So now here's a couple of things to tackle. First of all, the ticket prices I saw listed, Sporting News had this, had them listed starting at $707, going up to about $80,000. If this is to be believed, that opening price, I think, is a little aggressive, and maybe they'll have to adjust it, especially with sight lines, depending on what kind of screens they put in. What do you think?
That's huge money. Yeah. That's huge money. But I feel like across the board, I'm a guy, and we've talked about this privately, right, Steve, that, I mean, I just saw AC/DC a couple weeks ago in Soldier Field in Chicago. I went to a Bears game last year, sat lower level. Going to a few other concerts while I'm back in the Midwest this summer, right? But I'm also waiting. I wait till the day of, till the day before, because prices and get in, just get in. I mean, $700 get in for Crawford and Canelo is an astronomical number. And I don't think this is one that you can wait for, right? People are going to be, and meaning like, you're not going to be able to do what I do with some of the events that I go to, right? This is going to be one of those events that a lot of people are going to travel for, presumably, right? There's going to be a lot of people trying to get in beforehand and iron out their plans. I think my gut reaction is that's ridiculous. That's astronomical. No one's going to pay that. But as time has proven, Steve, none of that matters. It's absolutely going to be full, and the people with the money are going to be there, and it's going to be a spectacle.
Ryan McKinnell's with us. So they're trying to get $65,000 for this fight at Allegiant with Canelo and Crawford. It's on September 13th. Here's the other interesting note. I've been telling everyone about this the last week or so, and I keep saying I might be the only one in Sports Talk Radio talking about this, but the ICE raids, the perfect spot for ICE to go and get their 3,000 quota every day, are sporting events. And we saw it yesterday where they were outside. They say they weren't, but they were outside Dodger Stadium looking for permission to go into the parking lots. We have a fight on Mexican Independence Day with a Mexican fighter who is a huge Mexican fan base, Mexican-American fan base. Something's got to be worked out here, and I think it's got to be announced well in advance. I mean, if Dana White, if he needs anything from his friend Trump, this is the favor to call in. Otherwise, if there's no clarity, I don't know what's going to happen to the Mexican fan base around this fight. Why the hell would you go out there if you're a Mexican-American citizen and be like, yeah, I might get scooped up and then released after the fight?
Right, and also, if they tell you they're not, are you really going to trust them?
That's the other part of it.
Are you going to be like, yeah.
Because if I was running ICE, and again, I don't agree with what they're doing, that's what I would do. I would lie left and right. I don't have to ID myself. Like, we don't even know what this organization is or who's doing it. You don't think they're going to stoop to the level of being like, yeah, just tell them we're not going to be there, and then freaking, you know, mega paddy wagons. Everyone get in.
And I'm laughing. I'm laughing at the absurdity. I'm not laughing because I agree with it. I'll say this is like, I'm a crazed white, right? Like, I am a white American. And even I, because of my social media footprint that I leave and some of the things that I say, I don't like the idea of traveling. Like, I don't even want to go through TSA. Like, I don't want anything scanned. I don't want to get stopped by, forget the police. I don't want to get stopped by a security guard. I don't want to be on anybody's radar. And again, I am white and middle class. So yeah, if I was, there's no way I would go to that fight. I wouldn't even go in disguise with white face and an American flag and like disregard my Mexican heritage if I was Mexican. No, I wouldn't. But Steve, I don't like, I talked to you last week and the world looks vastly different this week than it does last week. I'm hoping when September rolls around, cooler heads will have prevailed. Some of this will have died down. It's going to be a wild summer though, brother.
You and I both watched that stream. The audience on the stream wasn't very big. I'm guessing that it's probably not due to a lack of interest in the fight.
Yeah, you got to think, right? I agree. I think it was about, I think when it peaked, it was about 14,000 on the live stream for the press conference earlier today, but earlier on a Friday, right? Didn't seem to get a ton of hype. Also, Canelo, and you and I watched this, Canelo and Crawford are not, they're not big talkers. My God. That was a big thing that Bud got hit with in his time with Arum, and sort of the critiques on Crawford was this guy isn't particularly engaging, right? So I do expect, you mentioned New York, Vegas. I do expect that to ramp up here, Steve, as we get closer to the fight, even if it is faked.
The other interesting note, we're talking to Ryan McKinnell about the big fight that's going to be here in September, is it's going to be on Netflix. I want you to listen to Turki Alashi because he addressed this and kind of, you can understand him sort of on what the philosophy is here.
If you ask about the numbers of the subscriber on the pay-per-view, let's see the record. In that time, in 2015, 2013, the internet and the piracy was not like now. Now is the best options to go with the big platform, and I think this fight we will have the big record around the world, and we will show the world what is real boxing. Especially Netflix, we'll show them what is the real boxing.
This is great for boxing. It's great for boxing fans. I hope it opens something new here where pay-per-view doesn't have to be the main feed for fights.
No, I've said this forever. I think that's the future of live events. And if you really want to get the most juice out of the proverbial squeeze, if you're a promoter of anything, I don't even care if you're like the NFL, right? Nobody's paying. I mean, okay, maybe the NFL isn't a great example because people will pay $800 a year for Sunday ticket. But when you look at these, you know, the UFC at 80 or 100 or whatever it is, you look at how piracy is run rampant. You essentially have to make it so easy that people don't steal. Right? Stealing is still, and pirating is still relatively easy, but when you include it in a Netflix subscription that's at $15 a month, people are just going to say, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll go with my friend's house or whatever. I'll get my own Netflix subscription for this month and just pay the $15. And Steve, that viewer retention, getting people in that door for that first purchase, a lot of us, right? That's how we're still subscribed to a service. It was that first purchase. It was that first point of contact. And I think live events, not just for Turki Alashik and Canelo and Crawford and what this means, right, for Netflix, but for all sort of these live event sort of premiums going forward, I think it's a huge tide that's shifting. We saw it with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. We saw it on Christmas Day with Beyonce and the NFL, right? And you're going to see it again with this. I think this, the thing that makes Crawford and Canelo so special is this is a boxing match. Like, by all accounts, if you were ever going to pay $100 for a main event on a traditional pay-per-view platform, Canelo and Crawford is it. But we're not going to have to do that. It's going to be included in our Netflix subscription. Definitely feel like we're watching the future unfold before our eyes.
Ryan McKinnell is with us. So you got Crawford and Canelo going at it here in Las Vegas, both, you know, mostly in their prime. People really want to see this fight. They've been wanting to see it for about 5 years. Do I want to see Bill Goldberg in WWE?
Yes, Steve. I think you're the exact demographic that WWE's going for. But no, you're right. The unstoppable Bill Goldberg, the former WCW champion. I think he's like 58 years old now. He is back in the WWE. He's getting essentially what is being Aiken and billed as a retirement match against their world champion Gunther coming up on this Saturday night main event card. And fans are split, Steve, you know what I mean? Because he is an older guy coming in. He hasn't been on TV in years. He actually gave an interview earlier this week where he talked about, I was 176-0, right? I don't need to wait in line, because there's a lot of blowback from fans, from probably people, boys and girls in the back that are like, yo, like, what's the deal here? And for anybody, any layperson out there who's rolling their eyes, it's not real competition, the belts are fake. No, I get that. But you have to look at a WWE belt like a promotion at your job, right? It's a symbol of work and output and the work that you put in. Bill Goldberg hasn't put in any serious work in this business in really almost 20 years. He's had spots where he's popped in, but he's not a regular, right? So this has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and it's taken shine off of, you know, current and younger talent. The flip side, I think, Steve, and you can see that argument, would be, well, Goldberg's bringing eyes on the new product. That's why he's here. He's roping in older fans, and hopefully they stick around. But that's what WWE does. They love the nostalgia push, right? They love that grab.
You know, I got into this topic with, and what I'm going to get to is talent acquisition and building stars. I get into this topic multiple times with RJ Clifford, but I hadn't thought of you on the wrestling side. And the topic is, there are amazing amateur wrestling stars, but the UFC seems hesitant to pay big money, like actually outspend amateur wrestling. And that's what RJ told me. He's like, these guys make a lot. And, you know, Kyle Snyder and, you know, Stevenson and the kid who upset Stevenson, like, those guys need to be in MMA. But now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, wait, wouldn't they also be great candidates to be in WWE? How is wrestling spending its money? Are they still in the talent acquisition business? Why aren't they making a run for millions of dollars at these amateur wrestling stars?
Absolutely, and they have. Stevenson, Gable Stevenson, the national champion, the gold medalist, right? He was a part of WWE developmental. The problem is he doesn't have a personality. WWE is acting, right? It is live stunts. It is Hollywood. You do need that next level beyond athletics. So the WWE, and they've done this for quite some time, they look across all of athletics. Right? They're looking at D1 track stars, gymnasts, especially for the ladies, right? They're looking at you know, football players that fell out, that didn't make the NFL, that couldn't quite make it through that grind, right? They're looking for everyone who's an athlete, but more importantly, everyone who's an entertainer, because that WWE brand is strong and there is serious money to be made. And if you are any sort of athlete, right, if you're an amateur wrestler and you've got any sort of charisma, you've got to be looking at the WWE as a much clearer pathway to riches and fame than the UFC ever could. Why would you be in the UFC? Why? So you can grow up and be one of the greatest fighters they've ever seen, a heavyweight champion like Francis Ngannou, then ask for your worth, and then Dana White and the company tells you to go kick rocks, right? Or you're George St. Pierre and you just want a steroid-free sport back in 2012, but Dana White's doing a press tour saying, well, I don't know if George St. Pierre wants to be a fighter anymore. He doesn't have it in him, right? Why would you go through all of that beating, all of that blood, all of that sweat, all those tears to reach the pinnacle of your sport and then have the top promoter and the top brand besmirch you at every corner? The UFC's a joke. And the athletes, I think, are starting to see it more and more than the fans, right? They're looking like, there's like, wait, how much did you make? What's your bottom dollar? And then they see the way that they're treated by the brass. Why would any, right, self-reliant, you know, confident athlete ever put their future in the hands of Dana White and the UFC? That still baffles me. But I think that number's getting less. And, Steve, we talk about it a little bit. I think that's going to drastically affect the future quality of fighters that we see competing in the octagon.
Ryan McKinnell's with us. We got about a minute left. Big anniversary time for one of the scariest movies ever, a freaking barrier breaker in Jaws. Why is Jaws so important?
Oh, man, I just saw that today. I'm glad you brought that up because I did send that to you. Yeah, 50 years ago today, Jaws was released, right? No crazy VFX, certainly no AI, right? And I'm going to go swimming later this summer in Lake Michigan, and I know it's fresh water. I know it's fresh water. I know sharks don't live in fresh water. I know Jaws isn't there. But at 41 years old, there's still going to be a part of me wondering what's dangling underneath my feet, and is there a possibility that Jaws is going to pop out of the water? Steve, I mean, given the criteria, 50 years old, what it accomplished, the PTSD, the mark it left on our brains, it has to be the scariest movie of all time, right?
I mean, I still see videos where I saw a video this week where there was a lady standing in water and they got her out and there were sharks like kind of swimming in, you know, real shallow water. I'm like, oh my God, the sharks obviously are scary forever. Ryan, we're up against it. I'm glad we always leave like 8 things on the cutting room floor. We'll get to a lot of them next week. Have an awesome weekend, dude. I'll talk to you.
Cheers, pal. You too.
There he is. Big Mac, Ryan McKinnell.